It's time for Money for Lunch, where we feed your brain and your business with supersized portions of business and financial news. Now your host, Bert Martinez.
I'm excited about our next guest, Tom Spitali. Tom Spitali is a partner at the marketing strategy firm Impact Planning Group. Tom Spitali, welcome to Money for Lunch. So let's talk about this. First of all, what a great title, The Accidental Marketer. I mean, that immediately conjures up an image, and I really enjoy this because I'm thinking of people who have gotten lucky marketing, right? It's very few and far between, but tell me, what is The Accidental Marketer about? What would I learn from it?
Well, the title is apropos in that there's more people than ever in our estimation and experience in marketing roles that don't have marketing backgrounds. Of course, that's always been true of entrepreneurs who are responsible for just about everything in their business, including how to market their products. But more and more, even in bigger businesses, Bert, there are people that are in marketing roles that have a very technical background, not a marketing background. And that's because technology is being built into products of all kinds. And companies, when they're looking to hire or get some help with marketing, are faced with this decision. Do I hire somebody with marketing background or with technical skills? And more, they're opting for folks with technical backgrounds and hoping that they can teach them marketing skills. So that's what we do. We work with a lot of accidental marketers and try to distill these world-class marketing strategies into a format that people can digest them quickly, apply them uniquely in their industry, and truly differentiate their products and services.
Gotcha. You know what? And bottom line is, I think anybody who's willing to put the time and energy can become a good marketer. But it is a journey. It's not something that you read one book or you take a course and wham, bam, you got it down. This is a constant, you know, ever-changing landscape, and it's something that you really got to put time and energy into, right?
Well, I think so. But, you know, it's a little bit less mysterious than most people think. A lot of the comments that we get from people before we work with them is that, you know, sort of the ilk that marketers are born, you know, great
right.
marketers are born, not learned. And we disagree with that. I guess what we've done from our vantage point is we've studied what companies like Apple, Dell, Starbucks, Nike, you know, Enterprise, Rent-A-Car, some of the great marketing success stories of all time. And we ask ourselves the question, what is it that they did and how did they do it? And when you look across all of marketing and you start to ask those kinds of questions, certainly patterns emerge. Key questions that great marketers ask and frameworks and tools that can help you to kind of apply the lessons learned from these great marketers and shape it for your industry and your situation, the result is that people can learn to be great marketers. It does take time. It's like everything else. It's
right.
not immediate. But people can make, with the right frameworks, tools, and asking the right questions, people can make rapid progress in a very short period of time, faster than they think.
Sure. And I agree with you. As long as you have those right tools and frameworks, you got somebody like yourself coaching them through and really demystifying it, yes, it's going to help them expedite the learning curve and avoid some of the mistakes. Let me ask you this, because, again, you work with thousands of companies. Again, the people like I mentioned, GE and Pfizer, and you work with other companies. Do you find that there's a common mistake among these among the people that you work with that you see, or maybe some of the most common misconceptions about marketing that you see? You mentioned the somebody who's born as a marketer. Anything else?
Well, I think what happens is whether you're an entrepreneur running your own show or you're in a corporation in a position of leadership, you know, the tendency is to fall in love with your product. It's almost a prerequisite.
Yes.
I mean, you do have to have passion for your product to start a business and put everything on the line for that product or service. And you do to be, you know, promoted and get to the executive levels of a corporation, you do have to be a big fan of your product or service. But when it comes to marketing, you have to temper that. You know, you have to really be vigilant about constantly figuring out what it is that the marketplace wants. Do they still want what I love about our product, or what we've always talked about our product's benefits to be, or is it something different? And so, you know, we like to call this way of thinking of great marketers, we call it outside in, meaning simply your primary focus as a marketing strategist is to understand the reality and the changing landscape outside of your company, and then connect the needs of the marketplace to the strengths and capabilities of your company's product or service. What tends to happen when you don't do that is, you know, you ever hear the line, when you're a hammer, everything looks like a nail.
Yes.
And if you think you have a certain strength in your product or service and you've always been talking about it, you might continue talking about that long past the time that the market values that thing. And we see that happening all the time with our clients, and we try to get them out of that paradigm.
Gotcha. All right, so let me put you on the spot a little bit, kind of get your opinion on this. How do you define marketing?
Well, we define marketing, we like to say we define marketing with a capital M versus marketing with a small M. So it may be best to start with what marketing with a small M is. In many companies, marketers are just viewed as sales support or collateral developers, or those people that write clever, ads or pieces to promote our product. We view marketing with a capital M as the orchestrators of company strategy. By that we mean, we think the marketers are this conduit to the outside-in approach that I described earlier. They are the people that we think have to have their finger on the pulse of customer needs and changing trends in the marketplace. But they also are the people that have to be well connected with the company's internal capabilities and what the company can and can't do profitably. So in essence, these marketers with a capital M are the ones that drive the strategic process in the company and align everyone behind those strategies in such a way that the ultimate goal is the company is unique and their products are uniquely differentiated in the marketplace and can be sold at a profit to the company. So that's a big thing. That's a big role for marketers, but we think marketers should be ambitious in the drivers of that kind of strategy.
Right, and I like this distinction because you're right. Sometimes marketers and salespeople are almost treated like some unwanted thing or child, right? The unwanted stepchild. They're very much maligned, and sometimes their skill set is even kind of a running joke, you know, as though anybody could be a good copywriter or a good salesperson or a good marketer. And then when you listen to your explanation, it's, you know, people need to wake up and realize how integrated a good marketer needs to be, because they are essentially wearing one big, massive hat.
Yes. Yes. And you know, they have to have skills, interpersonal skills, because of this role of being an orchestrator of company strategy. They've got to work well with all of the functions of the firm, whether that be the sales group, whether that be the financial folks, whether that be the manufacturing folks. I mean, they are in essence the voice of the customer to all those functions in the organization, but also responsible in our estimation for figuring out how to give the products and how to make the products of the organization in such a way that they're profitable for the organization but valuable to the customer. And that's not easy to do. And that also means, Bert, that the customer isn't always right. I mean, marketers do indeed need to understand the needs of customers better than anyone else, but that doesn't mean they have to find a way to give customers everything that they ask for. They've got to find a way to create a value proposition that's profitable for the company as well. It's a big role.
Sure, absolutely. Yeah, matter of fact, it reminds me, Steve Jobs was very famous for saying, not only is the customer not always right, but I mean, his line was, the customer sometimes doesn't even know what they want.
even more so true today than ever before. I mean, you know, the technology, with technology speeding up everything, many, many customers are confused. And you ask them what they want, a lot of times they look at you with a, you know, with a blank stare, or they go to the bottom line. The only thing they can think of to say they want, I want lower prices for this product category. What's interesting is that great marketers working along with sales teams can serve a great valuable purpose to customers by helping them sort out the future. In fact, there's a book that's written in the last couple of years called The Challenger Sale that's all about this thing where this phenomena where marketing and sales work together to help the customers sort out the future and tell them what is the impact of trends and phenomena in the marketplace. And that's very valued by customers. And guess where customers turn first when they're faced with a choice? They turn to the companies that are helping them sort out the future because they trust them.
Yes. You know, and when we're talking about marketing, we're really talking about building that trust level. You know, it's an old adage, you know, you do business with people that you know, like, and trust. And trust is ultimately what the marketing is all about, that you trust that this company has the solution for you, and you're going to trust them, that they're going to stand behind that solution should something go wrong. And trust is ultimately this universal currency that we're all buying for, right?
I think that's a huge part of it. But, you know, I think it goes even beyond trust. When you talk about how you position and communicate your products, we've learned a lot over the last decade or so how customers' minds work. And, of course, trust is really important. But the other things you have to understand as a marketer are things like, you know, what position in the brain of our customer do our competitors already own?
Mm.
I mean, you know, the brain's a funny thing. It tends to, you know, with all the overwhelming amounts of information that most customers are facing, they tend to oversimplify offerings and associate a word or a phrase with a competitor's offering. As a marketer, you have to know what that is so that you could position in a way that's different from that. And that's a part of making sense to the customer with your message and your communication. It's not just trust, but it's also about being unique and different so they can take a spot of their brain, hopefully an important spot, and allocate it towards you and give you that mind share that you need to make the sale of your product or service.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, so let's talk about this. What have you seen that some of the best marketers do to create successful marketing strategies?
Yep. Well, you talked about Apple, and they're always a very fascinating case study. But one of the things that we look at, kind of, I think maybe a little bit uniquely that we see that Apple does is that they have almost a maniacal focus on what we think is actually a pretty small target market. That might sound, you know, counterintuitive to people who say, well, Apple's sort of a mass market product. But we think, going back to the days of Steve Jobs, that they focus actually on a very, very small set of customer needs in a very, very defined sort of fashion conscious, you know, cool conscious customer. And they make and design everything for a very, very small segment. And what's counterintuitive about that is that when companies segment and target a really defined population of customers and make a real unique value proposition for that segment, it almost magnetically draws in other segments. So what happens is you say to a business person, you know, you've got to focus on a smaller target and make something that's more differentiated for a smaller target. They automatically think, well, I'm just going to, you know, go out of business because that segment isn't big enough. You know, it's not going to float my boat in terms of what I need to do volume-wise. And what happens, though, is you become so differentiated with that market, other people come to you and they say, well, that's pretty cool. I it's not exactly what I need, but could you do this or that to change the product in the B2B situation? And you all of a sudden find yourself having conversations with people outside of your segment because they know what you stand for. They know what you are. And I think that's absolutely true with Apple. If you look, you go to a Starbucks, you look around, see who's using the phone, you might see somebody, the iPhone, you might see somebody that's using it that was probably that typical fashion-conscious, young, hip person. But you also see guys like me in their early 50s who aren't necessarily that cool using the phone as well, that have been drawn in by Apple's magnetic effect of focus. So that's one thing that we see that's really counterintuitive but powerful.
Yeah, you know what, and I want to elaborate on that a little bit. You're right. I think for somebody who is maybe unaware, maybe even, let's use the word, unsophisticated as to what they're doing, they think that, that broad, the bigger their net, the better it is, and that this laser focus thing, as you mentioned, is going to lose them customers. And we've seen the opposite to be true, not only in Apple, but you look at Rolex. Rolex has a smaller market than most watch manufacturers. The same thing goes with, let's look at, Tesla. And back to what you were saying about people will then come and tap you on the shoulder and because that you're laser focused in one area, other things come about, Tesla is starting to make such leaps in battery technology that they are now manufacturing electric car batteries for some of the biggest companies in the world.
Yeah. Yeah, so they've expanded their market that way.
Right.
So the other thing I think that happens with a company like Apple, and it sounds like Tesla's maybe doing this too, is rather than dilute your target market. And do you remember last year, Bert, when Apple was faced with this dilemma, they were trying to think, Tim Cook was trying to decide whether to make a low-cost iPhone for China?
Yes.
And we think he made the appropriate decision not to dilute the brand, right? And not to go to, what we think is that's just typical of a great marketer's decision. What they tend to do is they tend to find products for customers rather than trying to find customers for products. It's kind of a strange distinction, but rather than dilute and make low price iPhones for China, uphold the brand of Apple as a higher priced, cool status and bestowing technological gadget. And let's think about other kinds of things like that we can find for this target market, like a watch, like a smart television, like they did, going from computers to iPods, and iPods to iPhones, and iPhones to iPads. They find products for their target customer, and then they draw other segments in. And that's just a really great way to differentiate yourself.
Yes, yes, and I like that. And I think this is also one of those things that a lot of, again, unsophisticated marketers or even entrepreneurs, the mistake they make is that they chase the money. When you're chasing the money, you're trying to do the opposite of everything you just talked about, right? You're out there looking for a market, and then, oh, okay, everybody's buying smartphones. Let's go build a smartphone. No.
That's what happened to BlackBerry.
That's what happened to BlackBerry. Instead of saying, hey, let's build a product that we are in love with, that we know it's going to serve our specific audience, and then go from there. So I think that's one of the reasons that so many companies go out of business is that they're chasing the money. They're chasing the market share versus creating the market share or creating a specific product for that audience, like you were talking about.
Yeah. Well, look what BlackBerry owned. I mean, BlackBerry had they called them crackberries. Everybody was addicted. They basically owned, business business email, remote communication. I mean, that's probably a way to synopsize it. And rather than figuring out how to do that better and take that technology and export it to, I don't know, to, you know, making a, you know, being a part of, you know, a car manufactured for traveling salespeople or something. They decided that they were going to compete with Apple in smartphones, and it literally killed them. And so I think that's a perfect example of what you're talking about. They were chasing the money rather than asking the question, what are we on? What are our capabilities, and how does that match up with evolving customer needs, and how can we apply that to find more products for our customers rather than chasing more customers for our products?
Yeah, absolutely. You know what? We're we could really talk a couple of hours about that. I think that is one of the, you know, those big mistakes. You know, as a marketer, I got to ask you this, Tom. You know, when you see a company that has such a massive market share disappear, you know, it always, as from a marketer standpoint of view, it just boggles the mind. You mentioned BlackBerry. You know, we saw the demise of Blockbuster. And, and Blockbuster, what's even more incredible about Blockbuster is they had a chance to buy Netflix not once, not twice, but three different times.
Yep.
And they opted to do what poor marketers do, and that is we're going to create something to compete with Netflix, and we're going to call it Blockbuster Home or some stupid thing that had the name Blockbuster in the very beginning. So it diluted their core product, and nobody knew about, you know, they couldn't, the customer couldn't tell the difference between Blockbuster and Blockbuster Home. It was, you know, their distinction wasn't there.
And
so, you know, I would just have loved to have sat in and listened to the leaders at Blockbuster decide what to make, you know, how do they went around making these decisions. And, you know, here's again, just like BlackBerry, a company that dominated its industry for years. And bam, gone.
Yeah, we see it all the time, and we get called in a lot of times after these things happen to say, never again. You know, we're not going to miss this trend. And how, you know, we get asked, how can we not miss the next trend? And, you know, Bert, it's the problem isn't trends that come out of nowhere. You know what I mean? It's not that people don't know, Blockbuster didn't know that, you know, digitization was coming. You know, they'd have to have their head in the sand. The problem with organizations is they don't have a discipline for evaluating trends and making smart bets as a company. You would think they would, right? You would think that it's a regular part of their planning discipline to say, okay, this quarter, what are some of the new trends coming on the horizon? Let's look at them. Let's see which ones we think have a high probability of impacting our business and which ones are going to impact our business the most. And, you know, sort of a funneling mechanism so that you can see the ones that could kill your business and take some kind of evasive action or cooperative action, whatever it takes. But the fact is most companies don't have that discipline. They just don't, they don't do it. And it doesn't take that much time. It just takes regular effort to visit it. But people get caught up in the day-to-day of their business, and they forget to look at the big picture. It's a problem. So that's kind of what we help companies do when it comes to trends, is to set up that discipline and get you know, a mechanism for aligning the organization, getting all the smart brains working on the same problems, and you can avoid stuff like what happened to a lot of these companies that lost market share overnight.
Tom, sorry about that. I was just saying, hey, we're out of time, and it's been a blast having you on the show, and we'd love to have you back, bring you back, and talk more about marketing and marketing strategies. And again, Tom Spitelli, thank you so much for stopping by and sharing.
Anytime, Bert. Thanks. It was a lot of fun. Thank you.